gives me immense faith. Oh yeah, now your little bar is on track with mine.
That's helpful. That's mm-hmm. always heard.
We're pacing each other. Oh, it's like we're on the swing set when we were kids, and if you were like synced up to each other, you were married. Did you ever play that with your friends?
No.
Oh, shame.
I just was on the swings like a normal person.
We had like huge groups of friends, and then it's like if we would try to like sync up, like people going forward, backward. It's hard to do without a swing set to demonstrate. But
no, I got it.
Mm-hmm. Many relationships were started and ended on the swings.
That's bold.
Or the tire swing. That one you get to know people.
I will take your word for it.
Have you never been on a tire swing?
I mean, I must have at some point, but it was not a notable experience.
Apparently it's imprinted on me.
Yeah, I guess so.
We just had a really big like playground in our elementary school.
Oh. I mean, I moved around a lot, but I don't remember any significant playgrounds. I also, the swings tended to make me motion sick if I stayed on them too long, which is unfortunate because I really liked the swings. So,
honestly, it was a good workout without having to, like, be talented.
So true.
Right? Because, like, the monkey bars, I'm not doing that.
Oh, I killed it at the monkey bars.
I am not a monkey bars person. I could, like, do them, but I didn't want to do them.
The monkey bars did imprint on me. See, you had the tire swing. Monkey bars imprinted on me because in kindergarten or something, a girl who in my head was like much cooler and prettier than me, but we were in kindergarten, so she was just like blonde and cute, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we were really friends, but she did take time for like multiple recess sessions to teach me how to do the monkey bars. Oh, nice. And that was like a very formative experience for me that this like very kind other little kindergartner would take the time to teach me how to do that, even though I thought she was much cooler than me.
I love that for you.
Thank you. Okay. I love that for her. Yeah. Her name was like Caitlin and she looked like a princess. Caitlin, wherever you are.
Shout out to you, Caitlin.
You really just made my whole kindergarten year by being like a nice child.
Well, that's a PSA. If you ever have kids, anyone, raise them to be Caitlins of the world.
That's a very vague PSA. Raise your children to be Caitlins.
A, good at monkey bars. B, good at teaching monkey bars. That is the criteria here.
Pretty much. That's all you really need.
Mm-hmm. The world would be a better place with just monkey bars as the mode of transportation.
That's just not true for many reasons.
Or if we had those things where you would like hold and it was like the kind of like a zip line, but it was like metal. Like
a fancy ass playground.
Yeah, I realizing this.
Because I did not have that.
It wasn't like a zip line, but like you held on to it and then you like propelled and then it like you were in the air.
No.
Huh. How about like a jumpy bridge?
No. You had a fancy playground.
I feel like every playground around here has those. I should do like some recon and send you a picture.
Okay.
Because they're just like random park playgrounds have them.
Usual jungle gym slides, swings, seesaws occasionally.
Seesaws were fun. Seesaws were standard. Huh. I don't know, or I didn't know this was such a thing.
I mean, this might just be my personal experience. I'm not saying no other playgrounds have these things.
I was just like hearing about people's different experiences growing up in different places. Things are so different.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I was in Virginia in kindergarten, then went to New York, not the city, but New York State. Virginia was the earliest memory. So that's when I started, like, school, Virginia, New York, and then Texas. And then I only had a couple of years in Texas where we even were
– had, yeah.
Like, I mean, we had a playground, but I was too big for the jungle gym in, like, sixth grade.
Yeah, yeah.
Our idea of a good time, by the way, in the sixth grade when we would go out for recess, there used to be a tetherball, you know?
Ooh, tetherball was fun.
Yeah, but it was – there was no ball attached to it.
Oh, my God.
And they never replaced it. So our idea of a good time was, like, there was a tree kind of near it, so we would run from the tree and go, like, swing around the pole. Because the school was too cheap to replace the ball, so it was just a pole.
You had a pole.
So, no, we did not have, like, fancy zip line.
I need to like show you a picture because I feel like it sounds a lot fancier.
I know what you're talking about. I just did not have that.
Like, I just, or like a bouncy thing. I'm just so.
Not to my knowledge.
How odd. Well, you learn something new every day.
Again, we were swinging around just a bare metal pole. So. And we were not poor. It wasn't a poor neighborhood. It was, in fact, kind of a rich neighborhood. So I don't know what was going on there. I think it still doesn't have a ball. Occasionally we drive past and I think it's still just a pole.
That's so sad to be depriving children of tetherball.
Don't know that there's a huge thriving tetherball community. Well, I know that there isn't because there is no tetherball.
Well, I was going to say there couldn't be. Did you ever play Foursquare? Like, with the like a ball you'd use for kickball, you'd like bounce it like the like a chalk Foursquare, and then
I don't think we did.
Yeah, so we did that. We had wall ball. Apparently it was a very outdoor centric lunch.
Yeah. I was
just playing
horses. Never the most outdoorsy, I don't think.
I mean, I did same the
kind of usual running around.
Yeah, there was a period in preschool where I just would not wear pants. I'd only wear dresses, like, and tights. So tights were as pants as it was gonna get. So snow pants fell into that category. Something you maybe also aren't too familiar with.
Hey now. Lived in the Northeast until we had a whole song about snow pants. Warm and snuggly snow pants.
Well, I would have been
ankle snow pants. Come on now.
Well, I've always hated snow pants, but it started at a very young age.
You wouldn't have hated them if you had the snow pants song.
I was just opposed to pants. And so my preschool, that is very true. My preschool called my mom. It was like, she can't go outside if she doesn't put her snow pants on. My mom was like, I don't think that's going to be an issue. I don't think she wants to go outside. I'm like, no, it's cold. I don't want to put these snow pants on and get cold. So, and I've never, they just think of wet, not a snow pants person, but also not really a playing in the snow person. I enjoy being inside.
Big fan of being in the snow.
Yeah. I mean, we had, when the snowplow like deposits like all of the cul-de-sac like snow into one area and it creates a giant hill, that's fun. But if there was no hill, I wasn't outside. I think my brother made an igloo once.
Nice.
Didn't function that well, but
no,
it was circular. Because we had like block
tag
makers.
Yourself. I also don't function that well and am circular.
Oh my God, same. Yeah, I relate to that.
Welcome, cool. Throbbing members. You probably also don't function very well and may or may not be circular. If you are listening now, that's such a weird statement to me.
Hey, gotta call it like you see it.
That's so true. Mm-hmm. Welcome to Romancer TBR. We are very sleepy, but that's the norm.
It is. Ooh, the twins just.
I wonder if we'll ever manage to record an episode when we're not sleepy at, 9 p.m. my time. It's earlier for you, but.
Yeah, but I feel like. I'm not always sleepy, but like,
no,
pretty much.
I am always sleepy. This is just my constant state of being.
Yeah. 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 I don't think much is going to change. Ooh.
I'm like fist pumping. I'm attempting to hype myself up. It's not working. We're your hosts. I'm Caroline. She's Hannah.
It is me. It is her.
It is me. It is her. And we are both deeply into some historical romance, or at least in my case, it's historical romance specific, but reading slumps.
I'm into a 5-star reading slump. I haven't read a lot.
Yeah, I was going to say, I shouldn't speak for you. I am in a reading slump.
I mean, I've read some really good books, but I'm also in a slump because I also don't really want to be reading, but also I want to be reading, but I want to be reading really good books. And I'm in a 5-star reading slump. Like, I just don't. Or I haven't been reading a lot of 5-star. Like, for me, if I even read, like, too many 4-star books in a row, I just get, like, discouraged. Just kind of, like, bleh. And so that's kind of where I found myself. I've read a few really good his drums. Actually, I was like looking back at that because I just finished one really good one. I was like, is this like one of the better arcs of historical romance I've read this year? But I've actually read a lot of good historical romance arcs this year. Contemporary, on the other hand, a no. It's going to be a no for me. I don't know when my last 5-star one of those was. Oh, yeah, no, it was Nita Kelly. So there's that. That was a good book, How You Get the Girl.
I need to read that.
Yeah.
I really
made me care about basketball, which was impressive.
That is impressive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yes.
So there have been...
Nita Kelly. Also, I can confirm with my insider information that they are a lovely person.
I know. So. I think I at least met them at Steamy Lit very briefly. Mm-hmm. And from that, like, 2-minute interaction, 5 stars all around.
So mm-hmm. lovely. Mm-hmm. I haven't read that one, but I have read their earlier books, and I care about the cooking competition, which is crazy because I really don't like reality TV, like, competitive setups.
That's what – so I haven't read that one, but then the way that it's talked about in this one, I'm like, okay, I have to go back and read that one because now I'm invested. Something Wild and Wonderful I think is still my favorite, and then
– That was an excellent
this
book.
One is, yeah, this one was just a little bit below that. But I do have to go read the – whatever that one's called.
Love and Other Disasters.
Yes. Me, the disaster. Yeah. So there have been some very high points, but there have been just a lot of blah.
I just have been struggling to read, with the exception of I have been reading some books for work. Mm-hmm. So I have been
able to get through those. Yeah. And that's more
I've been in an F1 mood. Yeah. I want to read like Formula One romance and nonfiction. Those are my two interests right now, which is bizarre.
A sentence she has never said before.
I mean, to be clear, F1 specific nonfiction. Yeah. That's where the interests lie. But, like, that's all I want to be reading, with the exception of, like, again, the books that I'm working on.
Do you often reread? Like, how often do you reread?
Not frequently.
I feel like I see you. Yeah, I get too stressed
about the amount of books now, especially because I'm reading books for work. Mm-hmm. I get too stressed about the amount of books that I need to be reading. And so I don't often go back. If I'm rereading something, that's like, oh, that must be a very, very good book.
Yeah.
Because even I have favorites that I've only read once.
That is crazy. I mean, I have some favorites I've only read once, but I've normally hit them a few times. Because like when I'm in a slump like this.
And then you redid it.
I'm a player, guys.
No, if anything, I'm the player because I just hit it and quit it.
Oh, you at least you're right.
Redid it.
I'm the toxic player who makes you think I love you.
That's so true.
Goes back.
I had a discussion. I think it was at the – it might have been at Faded Mates Live where they were debating, like, what distinguishes a – like, is a rake in the contemporary context just a fuckboy? And they were arguing no and the differences – and it was very interesting to hear people's interpretation of what defines a rake because it was not always the same as how I define a rake.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, I think some rakes can be fuckboys, but not all fuckboys can be rakes. Well, I guess that just said the same thing backwards. I feel like, how do I want to say it? All rakes are fuckboys, but not all fuckboys are rakes? I don't know.
I don't know.
In their heart, they are.
When we do our rakes to. What was the rake to?
Rake to simp pipeline.
When we do our rake to simp, which let's be honest, most rakes become simps because you need that gratification of them hitting the extreme on the other end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This one, the one that made me text you that was like, he just spent like. He was resistant to the fact of falling in love for like 20%. And then he just committed to it and then just spent the entire rest of the book being like, I will do whatever it takes to get this woman to marry me. Like, that's humiliation excellent. Is not out of the question, like anything. There are a few books we've read that we can't talk about because the S&P strike. But there's a whole series that I feel like is just that. Just like, the heroes trying to convince the women that they can love them because they're rakes, but also
I do respect that, but I have a slight obsession with the rake who to the very end is in denial about the fact that he's become a simp.
I do also love that.
And like then the Sebastian St. Vincent of it all, where he's like, no, I'm a villain. And he's been obsessed with her from the bit, but he will not admit it. But he will take a bullet for her.
Yep. God, what was – there was something that I just read that felt like that.
God, I love
it. But the one that I was reading, it was like a Loretta Chase one, and she was like going on this rant – because the heroine was going on this rant about things that, like, he obviously wouldn't want. And she was, like, talking about their children that they would not have because he would never settle down. He's like, wait, go back to the children. What were you saying? And he was just, like, so – oh, my God. It was very good. Again, my brain wasn't fully in the two books I read of those, so I do have to reread them because I understand that I did not give them the full attention. But I also love the moment when, like, one person has been pining the entire book for the other, and then the other one has just been, like, fucking around and, like, not realizing it or, like, taking it for granted. And then, obviously, at the end, the one who's been pining is finally like, I'm done. Bye. Have a great life. And then the other one's like, wait, no, come back. I have seen the error of my ways. And then they're very desperate, and it's delicious. So I love that as well. But that's also not the topic.
No, when I was going to say when we get to our rake to simp pipeline episode, we will have to define a rake. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that'll be interesting. I'll have to think about that.
I mean, I'm sure there is a definition, but I feel like it's going to be it'll just be like a
too narrow
guy who sleeps around or whatever. Yeah. And it's like, well, yeah, but.
Because when I was thinking about the rake to simp pipeline, I was like, what am I classifying as like, because there are so many different types of rakes.
So many types of rakes.
You know?
And then, I mean, we just established there's, like, the rake to simp that happens immediately and, like, they're reformed into the simp so quickly and is so down bad. And then there's the rake who's in denial about being a simp.
Mm-hmm. And there's, like, the dissolute rake. And then there's, like, the happy-go-lucky carefree rake. Mm-hmm. And there's the daddy issues rake.
There's the, like, so many... dark and brooding rake with the heart of gold. There's a lot of rakes.
There are so many.
We're going to need, like, a chart.
We have to do it. We have to do like an episode on each type of rake.
It's a rake but it's like an actual rake, and all of the prongs are like splitting off into different kinds of rakes.
You know, you may be onto something.
I know I am. I can feel it. I can feel it deep in my bones.
I can feel it coming in the air tonight.
However, well, somebody's never mind.
Well, hopefully not in my bone or in my bone. Why was
it in the air?
Bone? Did you say bones?
Yes, I said I could feel it in my bones.
I was like, I hope someone's not coming in my bones.
Coming in the air. I was going to say somebody's going to be coming in the air. That doesn't make any sense.
That makes more sense, technically, than
in my
bones. So, yeah.
That's true. I hope no one's ever coming in my bones. That's not the topic. None of this is the topic. We're 18 minutes in. The topic is slump busters.
Mm-hmm. Dramatic
You
pause.
Have read – I'm trying to remember which books I picked. You've read one of my two slump busters.
Oh, interesting. I love that for me.
So
I haven't prepared anything. I'm just going off vibes.
I picked two because I was like, these are extreme opposite vibes. Mm. Like, I think it depends why you're in a slump and what you need to get out of it.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I picked two with very different vibes. So if you don't like one, you can always go with the other. If you don't like one, you're going to like the other. But you might like both. I like both.
I vibe with that. You need to start this off because now I have things to think about.
Well, if you're like, I'm in a slump and what I need is something quick, like something shorter than a full-length novel, probably steamy, always helpful, something like funny and not too angsty. There might be, you know, there's going to be a little emotional drama, but nothing over the top, nothing drawn out, just something like quick and funny that will just like, boom, be a delight and you're done. Slump busted. Get Thee Off My Lawn by Daria Vernon. It's short-ish, you know, it's like a longer novella, I would say, but pretty short. It gets steamy right away and it's great. It's very silly. The premise is that I don't even, what is the premise? She's going to get her pet swan off of the neighbor's property. And he's like, hey, he is like the son of the older guy who owns it. Like they were neighbors growing up. But he's been gone. So she doesn't know him. And she's trying to lure the swan out of the pond because it's run away. And he's like, why are you trying to steal the swan off my property? And she's like, oh, this is my swan, but it's not her swan. But then the swans are kind of playing matchmaker and they're having a delightful time. And they're like, what if we just like go fuck in the bathtub? And then some kind of drama ensues. Like, and that's the worst book pitch I've ever given, but it's so silly.
Because she's like engaged or going to be engaged to someone else. And then at her engagement party, that's when they like fuck in a stairwell.
Sure. And she like, screams and everyone hears her. It's fantastic.
But then like, it was, it was the perfect amount of angst because there's a secondary relationship, which was great. And then, like, I'm normally not, like, engaged to someone else. Like, that's normally not my trope. But, it was very fun. It makes sense. And it was wrapped up in such a funny, goofy way that I was, like, amazing. I love
it. It's, like, short and the perfect balance of silly, steamy, and angsty. Not, again, not super angsty, but, like, just enough to keep you invested.
I agree.
So that's my, like, quick and fun slump buster.
Okay, I have developed mine.
Excellent.
Oh my god, I've just have seen more.
That's news. I also say for the record, my actual go-to slump buster is Lord of Scoundrels. But like I talk about that book constantly.
So we're in the same brain because mine is just Loretta Chase.
Facts.
But obviously Lord of Scoundrels is fantastic. But I've recently read two of her series. I was talking about her earlier, so just top of mind. The one, it would be the Dressmaker series. So you've read book one for our, was it Speak Now episode?
Yes.
I think you read that for?
Yes.
Great book. Again, that was engaged to someone else. Almost engaged. And I was kind of like wary about it. And then it was just fantastic. Like, I think I could honestly go back and give it 5 stars because I really enjoyed it. The second one, perchance, is on our Rake to Sin pipeline. They were just so goofy and silly and fun, but so well written. And like, I just don't think humans are predisposed to dislike Loretta Chase's writing.
That's so true.
Just like, there's
always gonna be some of an author's work that don't quite work for you, but like on the whole, I say this as if I've read more than a couple of Loretta Chase. She's just such a good writer.
That's the thing. Like, I've read now, so that's 4 in that series, 2 in the last series, because she has another one coming out in 2025. So our queen is still writing. Thank God. I love that for us.
Really?
And her. Yeah, 2025. It's her most recent series is the one that I just was reading, and I didn't realize it was, like, not finished. Yeah. It's the Difficult Duke series. So the first one, I already forgot it, so we're going to forget that. But the second one was the 10 Things I Hate About the Duke. so that was like 10 Things I Hate About You. And that one was really fun. And the next one is My Inconvenient Duke in January 21st of 2025. So we'll see if that date stays, but very exciting.
Anybody that can write that scene in the cafe in Lord of Scoundrels where he unbuttons her glove and speaks to her in French. He also is the, Rake to Simp pipeline. Yeah. And only to accidentally talk himself into
he's a rake. Yeah, he's a rake because he's convinced himself and society has convinced him that he has a gigantic nose and that he's ugly and that no one will ever love him.
Society has convinced him he has a giant nose.
And so, like, he is a rake because he doesn't want, like, he doesn't believe emotional attachment is a thing he can do or people won't love him. So he's like, fuck it, I'm just gonna fuck everyone. Because
and specifically, I'm gonna pay them. Like, I'm gonna hire prostitutes
because he doesn't want to be rejected.
Pay them extra,
and they won't reject him. Exactly.
He's so dramatic. There's a, if you don't know or don't follow me on Instagram, I do a series.
I thought you were talking to me. I was like,
no,
well,
sorry, listeners, robbing members. I know Hannah follows me on Instagram.
I was like,
for those listening who perhaps
we have a beef, don't, actually,
yeah, plot twist. I do a series of pairing Tumblr posts, like text posts, with books.
Those are fun.
And the thing that inspired that entire series was one of the first ones I did, which was I was on Tumblr, as one does, and I saw a text post that said, his huge nose and whorish tendencies have captivated me.
Yeah.
And my first thought was, oh my God, it's Jessica Trent. She loves his huge nose and whorish tendencies, and thus spawned an entire series on my Instagram. But that I can't keep talking about this book. Anyway, yes, Loretta Chase, banger.
Yeah, so, like, I just think, because, like, that's what I went to in a slump. Like, I saw people talking about the series that I just read, the Dangerous Dukes or whatever, on Twitter. And I was like, you know what? She's not going to let me down. Like, it's at least going to be a 4-star read. Like, it's going to be great. And so I read those. And then before that, I think someone had recommended the Dukes Prefer Blondes. Mm-hmm. Or just, like, for them, that was kind of, like, their slump buster. Like, they just needed, like, something really solid. Picked it up and loved it. And so I was like, I want that. So then I read that, I think, around Christmas. And that was fantastic. And so then I had known you had read book one. So then I started with that and then reread in order. And they were all so good. There was a little novella in there. And they're just – because they have, like – they're not basic plots. Like, they're all very fun, like, campy – mm-hmm. things are happening, but they're not angsty, really. But there's always going to be, like, a villain that you have the POV of. I've noticed that. There's always going to be shenanigans and just, like, a villain who thinks they're villaining really well. And they're just getting, like, out-villained at every moment by the main characters. Like, it's the funniest thing.
Oh, story of my life.
Yeah.
When you think you're the villain, but you're actually just a nuisance.
Yes, exactly. And so, like, in all those books, there's, like, a person that you're in the head of, and they're just, like, getting foiled at every turn, and I loved it. So I do think that's, like, a quirk of hers, is that they're always going to be jumping heads with random baddies.
I do love a head hopper, though. Yeah, like, somebody who can do it well, that's so mm-hmm. fun.
And she can. So, yeah, sure. I just think pick up the Dressmaker series or pick up the Dangerous Dukes one or I guess any for backlist, really. I wasn't a huge fan of Mr. Impossible. That's, like, my one that I wouldn't really recommend. It hasn't aged well, because it was maybe, like, the 90s or early 2000s or something. But obviously, Lore of Scoundrels is a forever recommendation. And, yeah, she's just one that I think I can trust. Like, I just,
it's true.
I want her to write about my life, and then I want to read it because it'll be way more interesting than whatever I'm going through.
She's just so funny. Also, like, why is
it hilarious? So funny? I will say, I have noticed that Vivian Lorette gives me Loretta Chase vibes. I just read, yeah, one of my 5-star historical romance arcs was her most recent one, and that is called The Trouble with Inventing a Viscount. It's book two. I really enjoyed book one. That's also 5 stars.
This is a pink dress.
Yes.
So this one is. I had the arc of it, and I just never got to reading it.
Yeah. So you definitely want to get to reading that one. It gave me Princess Diaries 2 vibes.
Yes.
Yeah, and her family is hilarious. Like, her mother, like, because they're theater people. So it's just so theatrical and hilarious. And her mother gives sex education with a Mr. Turgid puppet, a Mr. Flaccid puppet, and then a Miss Content puppet. And they make appearances in both of the books so far. And they're so funny. But I loved her most recent book. But I was reading it while I was also listening to the audiobooks of The Dangerous Dukes, Loretta Chase. Like, not at the same time, obviously, but you know, I'd listen to the audiobook during work, and then after work, I'd go to read my arc. And I was like, they're just, like, blending together because the writing just feels very similar. And I also had read One Fine May by Courtney MacCaskill, and that's part of the Rake Review, speaking of Rake Reviews, series, which they do, like, a novella or, like, book per month. So that one's One Fine May, and it's, like, a different author, like, indie author for each month. And I also read her book in the midst of reading this arc, in the midst of listening to those two audiobooks, because I wanted to read it for May 1st, and it was April 30th. And that one also gave me, like, she's a very good author. She's, like, one of my favorite indie authors for historical romance. She has never let me down yet. And she also had, like, the campy, the funny, like, just lovable characters who get up to mischief, and you just want to laugh. So, all's that to say, Loretta Chase or anyone who vaguely feels like Loretta Chase.
There's a lot of wrecks for the price of one.
Yes, that's, yep. Nothing's going to change the second time around, I can tell you that.
Lord. Well, my other one, I guess, actually is kind of a similar situation. Because it's a book, but really it's an author. I'm going to swing wildly to the other side of the pendulum. Because maybe you're in the mood for something light and fun and steamy and silly.
I feel like I hope I know where you're going because that would take one off of my list to talk about.
It's probably not because this is the one you haven't read, although it might be the same author. We'll see.
Yeah.
And if that's – anyway, light, fun, funny, flirty, silly, goofy time. sorry, Vernon. However, if you're like, what I really need to get through this slump – is something that's going to break me emotionally so that I just, like, have to keep reading to know how this is possibly going to work out. Yeah. Might I recommend, well, really any of the Sherry Thomases I've read, specifically Ravishing the Heiress.
Yep. That's not obviously the one I
haven't read this one yet. I know this because you're either going to love it or you're going to hate it, and I have no idea which it's going to be. You should have
I don't have the capacity to be either very angry or
I don't know what it'll do to you.
Like very in love, but anger, I don't know if I can handle right now. So I don't know.
The thing about Ravishing the Heiress is I am constantly fighting the urge. This is one that's a favorite that I haven't reread, but I have been constantly fighting the urge to reread. But I can't emotionally. Like it's not a light and quick reread. I would have to commit.
Yeah, like, I don't know if I could reread Private Arrangements without, like, doing proper, like, vigorous Sherry Thomas or something. To
once you start, you're going to want to get to the end immediately because you're like, well, this is fantastic and I have to know what happens right now. Ravishing the Heiress, it's kind of dual timeline. So you start with them already married. They're, like, best friends, but they are not in love. Well, she's in love with him. She has been the entire time. He does not know this. When they became engaged, he was in love with someone else. And for historical romance hero reasons, ended up having to go through and marry this girl that he was not in love with. And he really resented her for it for a while. They had their ups and downs. The dual timeline is you do go back to the beginning of their relationship and see how all of this developed. And then you check in with them over the period. I don't remember how long they've been married. 5 years or maybe longer. I don't know. They've been married for some years. And you kind of check in with them over the course of their relationship because they go from this weird, like, she's infatuated with him but knows that he's in love with someone else but is kind of being forced by circumstance to marry her, but he doesn't want to and he feels that the love of his life is being taken away from him and, like, he's in agony over this and she knows this and he doesn't know that she's in love with him. And it's so emotional and she's been in love with him this entire time. And he's just kind of unaware of this to a certain extent, but they are, at this point, when the book starts, very good friends. Best friends, one might even say. They're, like, business partners.
They weren't friends before they got married?
No.
Okay, okay.
I think, unless I'm confusing this with another book, which may be the case, you know me, I believe she was engaged. She was, like, an heiress. So she was engaged
ravishing.
To – yes, that'll do it. The title of the book will probably give it away. She was engaged to some – I think he's titled, but I don't remember what the title was. And he died. And so the hero, whose name I'm blanking on, inherited this, like, destitute estate, basically. And so he was in love with this other woman, but now he suddenly has inherited this destitute, crumbling estate and desperately needs money because literally the walls of his, like, castle or whatever that he's inherited are crumbling. And so he has to go through with this marriage that whatever relative it was had originally planned out. And she's like, great, he's real cute, and he's like, I am in love with someone else and I always will be. But then they become best friends and also business partners over the years. So when we start the book, this other woman that he's been in love with that had gone off and married someone else has been widowed, and she comes back and is like, hey, I'm widowed. And he's basically like, all right, Millie, I think he says, like, 6 months to try to get an heir, and then I'm going to go, live with her as my mistress, basically. And Millie's like, cool, okay, sick. And it is, like, they're consummating this marriage. They also agreed at the beginning of it. They're like, we're going to wait this many years to consummate the marriage.
I do love that.
And so this is the first time. And it is devastating. The pining I don't know how she does it, because, like, everything about the setup of this book feels like it should just be terrible.
Uh-huh.
But it's somehow, like, I'm in so much pain and I'm so happy about it. You know that we don't stand J.K. Rowling.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
You're going to suffer, yeah. but you're going to be happy That's about
exactly
it or
whatever. That's exactly what came to my mind in the freaking divination.
Yeah, you're
going to
suffer, but you're going to be happy about it, and you're going to be so mm-hmm. invested. It's also very steamy because it's Sherry Thomas, so of course it is.
Yeah.
It's just, like, agonizing. And you're going to have to get to the end of it, like, once you start. It's so – it burrows in your brain. I don't know how to explain it. I loved it so much.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I am truly intrigued as to how I'll feel.
You might hate it.
I could very possibly, because I definitely dislike – like, I would hate the book – that he would be in with the other woman if they were in a romance book together as the main characters and he had to go and marry someone else. Like, I hate that. Or, like, he gets, like, so close. Because I'm just like, you wimp. Just be poor and in love. But this is different. So who knows?
Who knows?
Which is funny, because I was going to say, the one that immediately came to my mind as a slump buster, but I have another rec for after this, was The Luckiest Lady in London, because I fight the battle to reread that one constantly.
That book was and so I don't, horny
right and I've bat. Only read it twice, and I've only reread it because of our St. Patrick's Day episode, mm-hmm. like, was it 2 year whatever ago,
God.
Yeah, so a long time ago. And so, like, I was like, oh my god, I have to reread it, the horror. So I reread it then, but I've, like, thought about it so frequently because it's so good. And that one's, like, the angst I devour, because it's just them being misunderstanding and all that. I don't know. That one was just so good. So I think that one would get you out of a slump, too, because it does give you, like, some angst, but, like, it's a very centralized angst of just, like, them, and they work everything out, or they're, like, still on the same page and in their proximity to each other, even if they're, like, angry or fighting, and, like, they leap to conclusions, but it all works out, and it's fun. Hilarious.
Sherry Thomas, she's one that I mean, not that I've read that many of her books, yeah. but I have read several, and with the exception of one that I DNF'd that I will be revisiting at some point in the future, but
delicious.
Yeah. It may have been a book at the wrong time situation, or
that's
one that I need to read physically, not via audio, yeah. whatever it may be. But she is just, like, such a good writer,
mm-hmm.
that even knowing, like, obviously every author has some books that you don't necessarily jive with, I just feel so safe with her. And, that's not true. I feel very unsafe with her, in that every time I pick up a book, I'm like, I'm ready to suffer. But I know it's going to be so good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Sherry.
Oh, that's the same. That's how I feel about Teresa Madeiros, which is my next rec, because I just have not picked up a book by hers that I haven't loved. And, like, for me, she's going to be a slump buster, because, like, I just picked up a good amount of her backlist from this, like, used bookstore in Minneapolis, and I was in heaven. My mom lost me. She had no clue where I was. There was no cell phone reception. And I was like, I'm not leaving this room so they can find me. But, like, I'm not – you can pull me out when I'm dead and gone, because there were so many books. And there were so many of her books. And, like, I just know when I'm going to start one of her books, like, the writing's going to be fantastic. It's going to be crazy. And I'm going to love it. Like, I have no fear of starting one of her books. Like, I think I gave one of her books maybe 3 stars. And that's only – it's, like, the Lucy Kleypas effect. Or there's even, like, the Loretta Chase effect of, like, a 4-star Loretta Chase is a 5-star anywhere else. So, like, so the only reason I give the Teresa Madeiros one a 3 is because I have read several better ones of hers.
Sure, comparatively. Still, like, compared to the other Teresa Madeiros. Yes.
Exactly.
I do the same thing. I do that with Lisa Kleypas all the time. Uh-huh, another slump buster for me. Especially if Mary Jane Wells is narrating the audiobook.
Yep. The Ravenels is a great slump buster. Because you could just, like, crank those out so fast. So good. The narrator is the same, obviously, Mary Jane Wells.
I'm also constantly, like, fighting the urge to reread Devil in Winter.
Just me with
I was thinking about
Spring.
That book literally earlier today.
Yeah.
Well, before we brought – I mean, I brought Sebastian St. Vincent up on the podcast. I was thinking about the I think I read another book where they – oh, I did. I read another book where they at the end, they had an anvil wedding. They just didn't want to have a big wedding, and he was Scottish, so they went and got married in Scotland. And I was like, oh, my love is upon you. Damn ring!
Yeah, like, I just love having an author that I can turn to with a big backlist. So, like, you know, Loretta Chase, Teresa Medeiros. I mean, Teresa just has so many, like, she has such a varied, like, range of things. Like, she has, only has, like, two audiobooks, which is...
Rude.
It's rude. It's a crime. It's my villain origin story. It's my 13th reason. Like, why? I don't know. And it, unfortunately, is that one of those audiobooks was the 3-star one, just because it's got to be like that. But those ones, I'd say, are, like, pretty, like, basic historical romance. Like, those are, like, pretty straightforward. I think one may start out where someone's in jail and then they get married or have to get married or something, which is a fun plot. Sure. Yeah. And then we know that she has the paranormal After Midnight and then something vampire. She's got those. So if you the like are feeling
loved me.
Yes. If you're feeling paranormal, you can go there. If you're feeling time travel, you can go to her time travel series with her Puritan witch and 90s billionaire and then their daughter who's a witch. But she doesn't maybe know it. And then she goes back to medieval times and then gets a knight who then is like, I have to burn her because she's a witch. Fantastic. I mean, as you what do you mean? As you do. I mean, oh my God, it was so good. So she's got those. And then A Kiss to Remember, Amnesia, of course. She's got an amnesia book. And it was fantastic. Like,
I do love an amnesia book.
I love an amnesia book. And I just love her so much. Nobody's Darling. I've heard great things about that one. That one's a Western. Very excited. I just picked that one up. So I will be reading it soon, hopefully. Because I just cleared out my neck alley. So now I have time for physical reading. But yeah, I mean, I just think any of her books is a pretty safe bet. Oh, and Thief of Hearts, Pirates. I mean, come on.
So true. Like, Captain Doom.
Captain Doom.
How could we forget Captain Doom?
I almost did, and I feel atrocious. Like, so many different – she is one, if you just don't know what you're feeling and you need to see, like, a range, a buffet of themes and subgenres, because she's got them all, and she can knock them out of the park. I don't think she's still writing, and I really wish she was. I don't know where she is, but baby, come back. Because we need her. But no, I just
right she's one of my favorite her most.
Exactly.
She vanished.
Vanished, I say.
Teresa, you are the Avatar, the last airbender.
She's a wordbender. God, her writing is just so fun. I mean, because like the time travel ones, like the first one was like super, I'd say, angsty. Like, he gives a little bit of Whitney My Love of, like, that man does some things at the end. You're like, do I like you? Maybe not. But was that bathtub scene that we just read very hot? Yes. Like, oh, yeah, the hottest bathtub scene I've ever read was in the Puritan witch one. So that's a great thing. She writes great sex scenes, too. Like, she's just all around fantastic. Same thing with Loretta Chase. Like, can't go wrong. Can only go right, and I love her desperately. And that's that.
She's like Zoolander. Can only go right.
She's both the last Avatar, the Airbender, and Zoolander.
Yeah,
you know, accurate. Honestly, I can't dispute. I would also say that Cressy Cole is, for me, another slump buster, because I do be rereading those a lot.
You do.
I do. And her historical ones were really good, or at least the two I read. And then I do have her, which will also be a slump buster for me in the future, is her, I'm predicting this because I know it's true, her, the one with like all the plaid. She cut like there's green, blue, and red.
Something those. Desire. Yeah, I have one of them.
Yep. So I need to read those. They don't have audiobooks, so like it's gonna be a visual moment. And then I also just got her contemporary think it's The Master. I've heard really good things about.
Oh, yeah.
It's like BDSM-esque. Mm-hmm. So
I think
another thing I'm excited for that will bust some type of slump.
It'll bust something.
I have great faith that it will. So I am very excited for that. So, and Tessa Dare, Lorraine Heath, again, Tessa Dare really hasn't steered me very wrong. Like, I have some I like less, but still good writing and fun time. Same thing with Lorraine Heath. I mean, like, if I dislike Lorraine Heath, like, she knows how to make me dislike a book, but, like, most of them, if you're looking for, like, angsty and, like, crying in your bathroom because of epilogues, that will do it. If you're in a slump of crying, Sherry Thomas, Lorraine Heath.
True. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't know that I wonder if I have cried during a Sherry Thomas. I don't know that it's crying angst so much as just, you're like, right, everything hurts angst.
You're right.
But I cry a lot, no, so I honestly might have cried. Who's to say, really? I might have cried during Ravishing the Heiress. That was intense.
Yeah.
I also low-key might have cried, though, when he has a little pet mouse in the past that that the other woman had given him, and the pet mouse gets old and dies. And
that would get me.
Was upsetting. She gets it, like, taxidermied, so it lives on the mantel place, like the little taxidermied mouse. But he, like, carried it around in his pocket and was very distraught when it started, like, getting to the point. It was very sad. Men and animals, something about it. I was like, what do you mean you're emotional over a little mouse? What do you mean? God, that book was so good.
Ugh. I know. That is on my list. I own the audiobook. I will read it eventually. Cause, I mean, slumps are so hard because, like, if you go to just a trope and you do a book based on a trope, like, that's a lot less reassuring than an author that you know you love. Because I think, like, I've tried to do that with Amnesia. Like, I've tried to kind of, like, jump author to author for, like, Amnesia. And, I mean, there are definitely some Amnesia books I do not like.
Yeah.
And so
I'm not a good slump buster author. Beverly Jenkins rarely steers me.
You're
wrong.
Right.
I don't love all of her books. Like, there are some that don't quite work for me for sure. But, like, chances are high I'm going to have a good time.
Mm-hmm. I do agree. Oh, just all the classic.
That's so true. They're classics for a reason.
Exactly. Like, you just really can't go wrong if you want a good time. Like, a well-written good time. I'm looking at Daring and the Duke right now on my bookshelf. That could bust a lot of things in me.
I cannot remember.
That's the third one in the blue, pink, and yellow series. The Bastards, Bare Knuckle.
You know, historical romance titles.
Yeah. So many
Daring Dukes and the Daring, I got it.
And it's Wild, just, and there's, Rogue, and Ravishing. And
there's a lot.
Yep. But that book I also constantly think about rereading. I'm just caught up on, like, do I want to read the other two before I get to it to make me hurt more and make it feel better more? Or do I just want to, like, go straight to that one because it's so good? Questions.
Ease of puzzlement.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there you have it. Hopefully if you're in a reading slump, like some of us, this was helpful. Or maybe you just wanted to read some good books, in which case we gave you actually way too many. This might actually have been less helpful. Because Hannah just started listing whole authors with very long backlists.
Because that's what I need if I'm trying to bust something. Like, I just need options because I'm very indecisive. And I need, like, if I start something and I'm not liking it, I can just, like, put it down and pick up something else. Which I do that multiple, like, a lot. Like, I'll just, like, randomly start audiobooks and then I just will never finish them. But it's not, like, a hard DNF. It's just, like, I forgot about 2 DNF. You know? Like, it's not an active choice.
It's almost
hard. I'm, like, thinking about I'm like thinking of like all the paranormal, like historical romances. Like,
they're pull just it together. We've given them too many.
There are just so many books. I just want to recommend them all.
Of course, there are.
Bewitching. I think about rereading that one a lot too. God, that book I didn't is so appreciate bad. It enough. I know.
That's so true. I don't think anybody appreciated it enough. Because right? why isn't love... everybody talking about that book?
You are correct. I just love fantasy, paranormal, historical romance. Like, so I true. Actually found a few more during Independent Bookstore Day that I need to, like, add into my lists. Like, time travel. Like, I just love them because they're so kooky and fun. Ugh, and I just love the rules of the historical time period. But then they're just, ugh. Okay. Well, we have reaffirm my love of reading, that's for sure. Because now there are so many books that I want to read that I love. Or that I will love or hope to love. And so much love. I just, yeah. I've just been like recommending so many books rather than reading them lately.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, but why not me? It's hard out here. It's rough.
So true.
Mm-hmm.
So true.
Well, we did it. We did. I believe you have some F1 updates.
Guys, Lando Norris won a race. Welcome to Caroline's F1 corner. Where Hannah gives me 5 minutes per episode to unleash the unhinged workings of my brain the Ricky onto Bobby. You. Yeah. The formula.
I recently rewatched that. I was giggling.
What a movie. Guys, Lando Norris won a race. And really, that's the only update that you need.
Has he never won a race?
He has not.
Is that rare?
Yeah. There's actually only been – I saw somebody talking about how rare it is to have a new, like, first-time race winner in F1.
Yeah. Well, how there many years has he been in – at this level?
2019.
Damn.
So this is his sixth season. There are some guys racing who have been there longer than him and have never even gotten on the podium.
My God.
You just, that'd if be you me. Have a bad car, like, you're just always back in the midfield. So there's, like, Kevin Magnussen, for example, I can't remember if he won or if he just got a podium on his first ever Formula One race and then has never been on the podium again. And he's been racing for a long time.
Live fast, die young.
Nico Hülkenberg, his bad teammate, girls also, well. He's never been on the podium.
Gosh.
So, yeah, it's not, I mean, it's kind of luck also.
It's Max
like,
Verstappen's you can be, world, and they're just living in it.
Yeah. Well, so Lewis Hamilton has the most wins. Mm-hmm. He's at like 100 and something. He has broken records. But he's also been in the sport for many, many years. But in the last few years, I think we've gotten like one new race winner per year, basically.
Like a first time race winner?
Yeah. I don't know the stats off the top of my head, but it's pretty rare. Usually because you have like the teams who have built really fast cars,
mm-hmm.
And who have a lot of money and also have really good drivers. And so they're the ones that are typically competing for the podium spots. And so if you have like, I mean, this year, there are like five teams. There's Red Bull and Ferrari that are kind of at the top. And then Aston Martin and McLaren are kind of getting their way up there. Hell yeah. And then Mercedes is really struggling, but they are still higher up. And then there's like the five kind of back end teams. Mm-hmm. And only the top 10 finishers in a race get points. So if you have five pretty good teams and they have two drivers per so like it's a big deal when the other five teams manage to get somebody up into the points because a lot of times the top 10 spots are kind of just like, you know who's going to be in the top 10. So it's exciting when they do. Usually there are like one or two people that are not from the top teams who end up in the points, but it's kind of like, ooh, who's going to get the point for 10th place, like who's it going to be? It is not easy to win. So he won his 110th race after 16 podiums, I believe.
Oh, you mean – okay, I thought you – I was like, this man's – I thought you said he's never won. So this is his 100 10th race that he's raced?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. I thought you meant this was his, like, 110th win. I was like, what do you mean?
Oh, no. What? He's not Lewis Hamilton.
Like, I know. I was like, I'm confused.
He's raced 110. He's had – I can't remember if this is the 16th podium or if he was at 16 before this. He was probably 16 mm-hmm. before this, where he had been third or second and just never. And when you're racing – like, in the age of Max Verstappen dominance.
Yeah.
The only non-Red Bull race winner – last year was Carlos Sainz, and he and Lando this year also are the only ones to have won other than Max. Damn. So it's not easy.
That is crazy.
But it took him a long time, and he finally did it, and it was very exciting. And I did spend way too much money on the merch that he dropped to celebrate.
I love that for you.
It's not even amazing merch. I just was like, yeah, I will spend $90 on a hoodie.
These are the days.
I will buy a t-shirt that says Lando No Wins with the no. The back in the day, the Daniel Ricciardo lovers when he was teammates with him. Danny Ric, your Perth man. When they were
my Perth man, I do love him.
The like Lando haters started calling him instead of Lando Norris, they would call him Lando No Wins. And this has haunted him.
As it would.
Through the years, Lando No Wins. That's kind of the go-to. Anybody who's like, Lando No Wins. And he apparently, he knows because he would go like people's comments when they would say that to be like, LOL, you're the worst. But then when he won, he was like on the radio. He was like, huh, Lando No Wins. Like, that can die now. So his merch for this drop, what like the shirt I got, it says he had in his handwriting written Lando No Wins and crossed out the no. And I was like, I do need that.
That is very fun.
The hoodie, it says, like, something at P1, Miami, whatever, on the front in his handwriting. But on the back, it's when you flip up the hood. Underneath the hood, it has the Lando No Wins. I was like, this is
I appreciate amazing. His commitment to that. So when – I feel like I've asked you this. When did you switch from Charles to Lando?
You know
– because he was on the podium, too, and I was like, she's giving no crumbs to this man.
Well
– he's left in the dust.
It's because in any other – if it had been, like – Max, Lando, Charles, I would have also been excited if it had been – like Max P1, I mean. If it had been anybody other than – like if Max had won and anybody else was on the podium, it would have been Charles' excitement. But like you don't understand. The entire F1 community like rallied around Lando winning to the point where like every other driver was congratulating him. And Max was like actually happier seeming than when he wins. Yeah. Like he was just so delighted by this. All of the, like, teams were posting to be like, oh, you know, like, not our best weekend, blah, blah, blah. Also, congrats, Lando Norris, like, posting pictures of him winning.
Yeah.
Because everyone collectively was like, yeah, he deserves it. He's the people's princess.
He is a people's princess. But, like, what made you go from exclusively posting Charles Leclerc thirst traps and all of that edits?
I do love Charles Leclerc.
And then now I just see the people's princess.
What's Lando the, like, Norris. Well, let's be honest. Charlotte Claire is really the people's princess. They can compete for that title.
The people's prince I.
Well, actually, he's the Prince of Monaco, so I guess he already has his own little. What's the – is it Pride and Prejudice where they do the, like, it crept up on me so slowly? I have no notion. Yes, it is. I don't know when it began. I only knew when I was in the middle of it. But I believe I can date it. Back to – the first time I saw the estate at Pemberley, because she's a relatable queen, I'm firmly of the opinion that your favorite F1 teams and drivers choose you, not the other way around. So I just, Charles Leclerc was my first love. Love that man. But the first more I watched, one day I suddenly was like, oh no, why am I obsessed with Lando Norris? I don't know. It just happened. Just love him.
Makes sense.
Charles Leclerc has an adorable little dog now. So that's a new obsession of mine. His name is Leo. Leo Leclerc. Saint Mew or whatever, however you pronounce his girlfriend's last name. Because his government name, as was on his exclusive paddock pass with his little headshot, was Leo Leclerc Saint whatever. It was his full government name. Both of their last. It was amazing. I'm obsessed with that little dog.
Have a girlfriend?
Not to our knowledge, but there's been rumblings. He's just been seen with this Portuguese model, which, like, his last girlfriend, who everyone loved, was a Portuguese model. And he's been seen with another one. But she's sketchy. I know nothing about her except that she apparently dated like a Brazilian footballer and apparently cheated on him 3 times. So every time they spot Lando with her, everybody is like, stay away from her. But that also might
Daddy,
just be,
I love him.
Yeah, but that also might just be people on the internet being terrible to anyone who famous men date, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just to say. Personally, that feels like an attack because he doesn't know it yet, but obviously I'm the love of his life. So I'm like, oh, I can't believe you would cheat on me with a Portuguese model, but whatever. We don't know. He did do a lie detector test recently, you know, as you do for social media. And they were like, do you have a girlfriend? And he was like, no. And they said, do you have many girlfriends? And he said, yes. According to the lie detector test, he was telling the truth.
This just in, will Lando Norris ride the Rake to Send pipeline anytime soon? Or will he just continue having many girlfriends?
He's too many girlfriends. He's 24. Like, he is outliving what I have to assume is his best fuckboy life.
Yeah.
I hope so, anyway. Like, you're 24 and, like, a millionaire. You're probably a terrible person.
And now a winner. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why sports romance is a little bit hard for me. I will say I still really enjoy Alicia Thompson's The Art of Catching Feelings. Because I was like, do I really think baseball players are great people outside of baseball? No. I'm probably not supposed to. I can think they're beautiful. But that book, he was a very good person. I really liked him. And I was like, you know what? This is what I want. Not an actual baseball pro MLB player, because I feel like, yeah.
That's so valid. Like, they're all
probably terrible. I just feel like the similarities would end at the door. There'd be none. Besides liking baseball. To a different degree. So it's still not even a very big similarity.
Oh. My other update is that I literally just bought tickets, so Dana and I are going to the British Grand Prix. We're going to Silverstone, and we're very excited about it.
That is very exciting.
Have we told our boss that we're not going to be working for? Well, see, here's the thing, though. Basically, we're being paid to go, if you think about it, because that race is the weekend of the 4th of July. The 4th of July is Friday?
I think so this year. Or Thursday. I think it's Friday.
Well, we get Thursday and Friday off.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're already having Thursday and Friday off, then really we would only have to take Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday off, and then that next Monday when we're flying back. But, like, it's 2 free days off instead of –
Oh, you're talking about the first, I see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about the following.
No. If we take – no, at the beginning of the week, like, if we go the whole – if we fly up on Monday or during the weekend or whatever – really, we only have to take 4 days off total instead of 6 days off. So, really, they're paying us practically. Girl math.
Just and take double Apex. Like,
plain oh, of course I'm taking
and then be double like,
Apex.
Come work. On. Work. Overtime.
Overtime.
Big time a blowout.
Yeah. Clearly, this is work. When we go to Austin in October, which will be just a couple of weeks after the book comes out, also work.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly.
She's looking off to the side as if she's telling a lie. But she's a truther, guys. She's a truther. She's never lied once.
I don't think I look to the side when I lie, actually.
No, I think that's just like a urban legend.
Yeah.
And it's like one side or the other. Like, one is to like remember and the other one is to lie. And you're also mirrored, so who knows?
I don't know that I buy that, but regardless, Lando no wins, no longer has no wins. Lando now wins.
And we're Caroline and Hannah no wins.
Oh, that's true. We do have no wins.
So we can take the name from him. And
he's passed the torch.
Yes, because you're in a slump and I am in a different kind of slump. We are slumping. We are no winning.
We are no winning. I went to the F1 arcade in Boston, which is like a
Oh yeah, you went to the Boston too.
Yeah, very like cool bar situation with like full-on F1 like race simulators.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to do like 3 pretty short 10-minute or something races. And so we went and Dana was like, "Oh, I'm going to be really bad at this." And I was like, "Same." like, of course we are. It's Formula One, but in a video game. Like, of course we're going to be terrible at it. Everyone's going to be terrible at it. And she was like, no, you don't understand. Dana's from Staten Island, like, grew up on Staten Island. She was like, no, I never learned to drive. And I was like, oh, okay.
I do find that a wild fact. I know people from my work, too. They also don't drive.
If she might have had a leg up, because the thing is, you drive with both feet. Like, your right foot is the throttle and your left foot is the brake. Wait. And so you have to, like, turn the part.
Oh, I thought you meant you and your car drive. I'm like,
oh, my God, no.
Drive with 2 feet. I'm like, Caroline.
The thing is, no.
Like, I think that's.
In F1,
it's
one foot for the throttle, one for the
brake. So she was never used to just doing the one.
Exactly. So I'm like, maybe you'll have an easier time because you don't have to, like, mentally unblock the, like, just moving your foot. But it's, like, a 10 racers. So if it was the two of us, there were 8 other, like, randomly generated Formula One drivers on there. At one point, Lando did win, and I was like, oh, my God. Woo! So maybe I predicted it. Anyway, and I did finish 9th. Out of 10 on all 3 of those races on the second easiest race mode. But good. Dana finished 10th every time. So I won. Granted, Dana, again, never actually learned to drive.
You know,
it is what it is.
You win some, you lose some, and then you really lose some, and that's okay. I think I did go-karts. Or, like, not even go-karts, but, like, little mini cars that you, like, race around a track. And I think I got stuck in, like, okay, go-karts. I was thinking bumper cars. That's the one that bump into each other. And I don't even think I made it around, like, one full lap. Yeah. I think I, like, got stuck in the hay and they had to come rescue me. And then I'm also really bad at Mario Kart. So I think I would finish 11th out of 10. I'm actually pretty good at Mario Kart. So.
At least I am compared to my 8-year-old nephew, who only beat me sometimes.
I would assume the 8-year-old nephew would absolutely body you in Mario Kart.
That's pretty much verbatim what he said to me when we started to play. He was like, I'm going to destroy you. And I was like, oh, okay. But then I won sometimes. So he didn't destroy me. There is a pretty cool go-kart track in, like, Jersey City. It's just hard to get to. But we do want to go go-karting. Because I feel like it would be a good time. I would be terrible at it again. But see, the thing is, now I've watched so many videos about, like, hitting the apex and, like, when you start braking, when you're, like, and, like, how the racing. I'm like, okay, well, maybe I would be. If I had gotten in a go-kart at a very young age, maybe I could be the first. I'm just kidding. I would not be a good athlete, guys. There's I'm not that delusional.
There's an old Kristen Stewart movie where they race little go-karts and then they rob a bank.
Oh.
You should watch it. Only one of those things is on my bucket. It's called Catch That Kid.
Okay.
Corbin Bleu from High School Musical's in it. Kristen Stewart. You know, cars.
So it's just really bold that you had to add From High School Musical to your Corbin Bleu, as if I didn't.
I didn't know if you could, like, Corbin hear me. Bleu. Like, I feel like if I saw it written, I would know. But I feel like if I just heard someone say really fast Corbin Bleu, I'd be like, what?
My best friend was in love with Corbin Bleu. Probably still is, honestly. So believe me, I am familiar with Corbin. She used to tell us how when she would, like, go to the doctor's office when she was younger, they would be like, you know, imagine yourself in your happy place, like in a very relaxing situation to, like, get a shot or whatever. And her happy place that she would go to was a swimming pool full of Jell-O with Corbin Bleu.
Oh my God. Well, then you should tell her about this movie. Maybe she's already seen it.
Maybe she was onto something, actually. Into the trenches. Because a swimming pool full of Jell-O with Lando Norris doesn't sound like a bad time.
It would be a weird sensory experience, but.
But it might be really satisfying.
I do support.
I feel like he would make it a good time.
But anyway, it's also the kid who was. Did you ever see The Pacifier with Vin Diesel?
No.
Shame on you. But I had a huge crush on the kid who was in that, who, like, had to sing The Sound of Music. He was, like, a closet theater kid because he didn't want to admit it, and he was being very emo about it and dyes his hair blonde. It's a whole thing. He's also in the Nancy Drew with Emma Roberts. He's also in Catch That Kid. He's the main kid they have to catch. So
the titular kid.
The titular kid, 2004. They were doing it right back then. Go watch it and have a great time. I don't think you'd hate it. Love, meh. Hate, probably not.
Wow. What an endorsement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, on that note, you've gotten all kinds of recommendations today. Yes, movies that you might not love, but at least won't
or
hate.
Know about.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Same thing with The Pacifier, honestly. And I was terrified of that Nancy Drew movie. I was too old to be terrified, but I was spooked. I was scared. I'm a wimp. Like, my track record of, like, movies I've been scared of as, like, not a child. It's a long list. Yeah. That's for another day. My shame.
We can unpack your shame in another episode.
We can. We can. We can. But, yeah. Next week, another newsletter. And then another podcast on whatever we choose. Bold of you to assume we know, if you did assume.
So true. I don't think anybody's assuming that at this point.
That's that you espresso to assume.
Why did you say it like an insult?
Anything can be an insult if you say it like an insult.
That's that you espresso.
It does really sound vicious.
It sounds like that's a you problem. That's that you espresso.
You're too bold. You're too beautiful. You're too blonde.
So true. Mm-hmm. I can't help it.
Your blonde hair is ravishing.
It's so blonde. So ravishing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Okay. We've done it against all odds. Lando Norris won. We finish an episode. The bars are the same for both of those.
Things. Landmark happenings.
Landmark event. Lando, landmark. Lando.
Nice. Lando has landed. We have Lando recorded. Oh, that was David Crofty. That was what he said when he crossed the line. That wasn't me. I'm not clever enough for that.
That's okay.
For the first time, Lando has landed.
Aww.
Not as good, admittedly, as the Vegas race when he said, "What Verstappen's in Vegas?" And I was like, how long did you have that banked? How long had you been planning that?
That is very funny.
Made me laugh.
I enjoy that.
Anyway, Lando has landed and we're done. We don't have anything clever for ours. We're out.
We're out.
Peace.